It's nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. We are your public radio station in Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 55 degrees. It's been 55 degrees all day long. We have overcast skies, east winds to 5 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. They're calling for cloudy skies for the rest of the day with a high near 60, south winds to 10. Rain late tonight after 4 a.m., low around 54 overnight with southeast winds to 15. Coming up, preliminary results from the recent election. The Anchorage Assembly is creating a task force because they don't believe the mayor's administration will come up with a plan for homelessness this winter. And Kuskokwim River fishermen are urging the state to open silver salmon fishing. That plus the first ever electrical vehicle tour to go from Fairbanks to Prudhoe Bay. We'll tell you how that went after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A federal magistrate judge says he is inclined to release the affidavit supporting the FBI search of former President Donald Trump's Florida home. NPR's Carrie Johnson reports the judge is giving the Justice Department a week to propose redactions.
The judge says he's not convinced the entire affidavit needs to remain under seal. Instead, he's ordered prosecutors to prepare a redacted version and send that version to him by August 25th. National security official Jay Bratt told the court DOJ worries about threats to witnesses and to the FBI agents who carried out the Mar-a-Lago search. He says the criminal investigation, which involves obstruction and mishandling government secrets, is in its early stages. Former President Donald Trump has not filed formal court papers since last week's search. Instead, Trump posted on social media that the document should be released in the interest of transparency. Carrie Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
Another major case against Trump's playing out in New York. One of the former president's most trusted business executives has pleaded guilty to 15 felony counts of conspiring in a tax evasion scheme with the Trump Organization. But Alan Weisselberg has not implicated Trump himself. Weisselberg entered his plea in a Manhattan courtroom today as part of his plea deal with the district attorney's office. Leah Meritz with member station WNYC has more.
The judge ran Alan Weisselberg through all 15 counts, read them to him. He admitted to each one, and then they sketched out the details of a plea agreement. Basically, in exchange for pleading to all 15 counts, Weisselberg will get 5 months in prison, which will likely be reduced to about 100 days. But he will have to testify about his former employer, the Trump Organization, and its role in the crimes he's already admitted to.
Ilya Meritz reporting on the possibility Weisselberg may be called to testify for the prosecution at the Trump Organization's trial this October. Kentucky's near-total ban on abortions will remain in effect after the state Supreme Court denied a request to block the measure. Kentucky Public Radio's Ryland Barton says a legal challenge against the ban is ongoing.
Kentucky's trigger law bans all abortions in the state except in cases when a patient's life is at risk. The state's two abortion providers sued over the law, and while a lower court initially blocked the ban, appeals courts have allowed it to be enforced while it makes its way through the legal system. The state Supreme Court did set a date when it'll hear arguments over the case, November 15th, a week after Election Day. That's when Kentuckians will weigh in on an anti-abortion amendment to the state constitution. For NPR News, I'm Ryland Barton in Louisville.
Another sign of a slowdown in the housing sector, the National Association of Realtors reporting today existing home sales in July fell 5.9% from the month before to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 4.81 million. The Dow closes up 18 points. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The votes are still being counted from Tuesday's special election and state primaries, but the early results are in for the August 16th election. As KMXT's Dylan Simard reports, incumbents from Kodiak have done well so far.
State Senator Gary Stevens and Representative Louise Stutes, both longtime Kodiak residents, hold significant leads from yesterday's primary with over 20% of the ballots counted in both races as of Wednesday afternoon. Both candidates have received just over 60% of the vote from the ballots counted so far in their respective races. Stevens has served as state senator for nearly two decades, and Stutes was first elected to the House in 2014 and has served as speaker for the last 2 years. Stevens says he was not surprised by the early results.
I've done a lot of campaigning and traveling around the district. Really half the district is off the island, off Kodiak, in the Kenai Peninsula, and Seldovia, and Seward, and Cordova. So it's really important to get around the entire district. It's a very big district. You know, it's 1/20 of the population of the state of Alaska, so it's good to get around and see everyone.
Stutes says she doesn't take any race for granted.
I never expect anything until I see the vote. I just don't have any expectations. All I know is that I work hard to do my very best.
However, under Alaska's new election laws, candidates in races with less than four people running aren't eliminated in the primary. That means Stutes and Stevens will face off against the same candidates in the general election as they did on Tuesday. Stevens is running against Republican Heath Smith, who received just over a quarter of the vote, and Republican Walter Jones, who has so far received 10% of the vote. Stutes is also running against another Republican, Benjamin Vincent, who has received about a third of the vote tallied so far. The general election will be held November 8th of this year. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
Senator Lisa Murkowski has widened her primary lead over challenger Kelly Chewbacca, with nearly all precincts reporting. Murkowski now has 44% of ballots cast, while Chewbacca is at 40%. Both Murkowski and Chewbacca will move forward to the general election on November 8th. In this Pick 1 primary, the top four vote-getters in each race advance to the general. On Wednesday, Murkowski's campaign said results showed clear and strong momentum for Alaska's senior senator. In the race for governor, early results have Governor Mike Dunleavy leading the primary with 42% of the vote. Independent former Governor Bill Walker and Democratic former state legislator Les Guerra are about 20 points behind Dunleavy. Republican Kenai Peninsula Borough Mayor Charlie Pierce is a distant fourth place. Late last night, Dunleavy said he's looking ahead to campaigning for the November general election.
Right now, where we're sitting, we're pretty happy with the results. But again, this is just the primary, and the real race starts here tomorrow.
Meanwhile, in the ranked choice special election for the U.S. House, Democrat Mary Peltola maintained her lead of 38% of first place votes. Former Governor Sarah Palin followed at 32%, and fellow Republican Nick Begich III came in third at 29%. Peltola was expected to finish ahead in the three-way race with only first-choice votes counted on election night. The two Republicans are splitting the conservative vote. If Palin's second-place standing holds, Begich will be eliminated, and if enough of his voters ranked Palin as a second choice, Palin could overtake Peltola's lead and win the seat. The ultimate result of the special election won't be clear until at least August 31st. The state expects to certify final primary results in early September. Whoever wins the special election will be sworn in next month to serve the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term until January. Turnout among registered voters on Tuesday was just over 26%. That's the highest in a primary election since 2014. The Anchorage Assembly is creating a task force to come up with a plan for sheltering homeless residents in the winter. The motion comes as some Assembly members say Mayor Dave Bronson's administration is failing to adequately prepare to address homelessness ahead of winter. At an Assembly Housing and Homelessness Committee meeting Wednesday morning, Member Felix Rivera said Bronson officials were supposed to provide a winter sheltering plan, but no members of the mayor's administration were there.
I mean, this is the hottest topic that we have going on right now in the municipality, and to not have the administration here, I think is just a dereliction, frankly, of duty.
Rivera read email responses from the Bronson administration that said the plan would instead come in at the end of the month. At a special assembly meeting later that night, Rivera presented a resolution to establish a task force made up of service providers, community stakeholders, and city officials.
In my opinion, we can't afford to half-ass this, and we need to do this in a way that relies on the immense amount of expertise we have in the community.
Member Cameron Perez-Berdia introduced the resolution with Rivera. He says he doesn't think the mayor's administration is capable of coming up with a winter sheltering option on their own.
I have no faith at this point that a plan is being developed and that we will see it, especially in time to address the crisis that is in front of us, which is 200 people living in mud at a campground.
The resolution to create a task force passed 8-2 with members Jamie Allard and Chris Constant opposed. Bronson administration officials were not present at the meeting, although municipal attorney Mario Byrd called in to say he believes there are separation of powers issues with the resolution. He says he's fine with the task force, but he thinks language in the resolution could affect decisions made by the mayor. Currently, at least 180 people are living at the Centennial Park campground following the closure of the Sullivan Arena Mass Shelter in late June. Another roughly 330 are staying at the Aviator Hotel and Guest House. The Bronson administration has plans to build a large navigation center and shelter. It's anticipated it could start sheltering people in November, with construction wrapping up in February. Kuskokwim River fishermen are urging state fishery managers to open the upper river to silver salmon fishing. On Wednesday, for the first time ever, the state closed the entire Kuskokwim and most of its tributaries to nearly all subsistence fishing to conserve the species. State data indicates the run is on track to be the lowest ever and is unlikely to meet state escapement goals for silvers reaching their spawning grounds. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports upper river residents say that their harvest would not have a large impact on the small run.
While lower river residents have been allowed to harvest silvers for weeks, the fish have just started arriving in the headwaters, and many residents there haven't been able to harvest any silvers.
It's the human right to have food, man.
Denny Thomas lives in Crooked Creek on the upper Kuskokwim. He spoke to state fishery managers during Wednesday's salmon management teleconference. The river had just closed to silver fishing that morning.
A lot of what our protein and the protein people eat in this village nowadays is silvers. You don't get enough of the others. And we need to be able to get at least some that we can fillet and freeze.
The state announced the river-wide closure 2 days before it took effect. Thomas and other residents said that didn't give residents time to prepare. The closure restricts more than just silver salmon fishing. It bans gill nets in the Kuskokwim and most tributaries, severely limiting fishermen's ability to harvest other species like whitefish. The month-long closure ends on September 15th. But McGrath resident Kevin Whitworth says by then, the silvers in the headwaters won't be edible.
I call them jello fish, and they're good for dog food, and that's it.
Whitworth criticized state managers for not restricting the coho fishery earlier in a more equitable way. He says a total closure at this point in the season places a disproportionate burden on upper river residents. In the lower and middle river, many residents drifted for silvers over the weekend. They knew a closure could be coming. Callers reported various fishermen harvesting around 30 silvers in communities along the lower water. Far upriver in Nikolai, where silvers haven't been harvested yet, resident Dan Esai found that news hard to hear.
It's a pretty rough year for us headwaters folks. Not one single family has met their needs. And here we hear about people drifting before the closure. You could imagine what my people feel.
He asked to be able to soak a gill net to harvest whitefish. The Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group passed recommendations to loosen the fishing restrictions. This is a group of river residents that advises state fishery managers. It recommended the river open full-time on the upper waters above Aniak and open to 4-inch mesh gillnets 3 days per week in the lower waters. But state fishery manager Nick Smith said the state would not be able to limit the mesh size in the river. Group members acknowledged that the recommendations prioritize harvest over escapement. However, members also said that the low population along the upper river meant that any silver harvest would not have a significant impact on the run. State fishery manager Smith countered that any harvest adds up and every silver needs to get to the spawning grounds. Last year was the lowest silver run on record, and this year is on track to fall far lower. Data from the state-run Bethel Test Fishery shows the run falling over 60% below the past 13-year average. Next week, the state will stop collecting data on the number of silvers entering the Kuskokwim. The seasonal funding for both the Bethel Test Fishery and the Lower River Sonar will end. State officials are applying to extend those projects next year. Because of the low run, federal managers are not taking control of the Lower River fishery, which would allow subsistence openings for local residents. For KYUK, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
A first-ever electric vehicle tour event from Fairbanks to Prudhoe Bay and back wrapped up on Tuesday. All 10 EVs that began the non-competitive event last Friday in Fairbanks made it to the end of the Dalton Highway and back, an accomplishment Arctic Road Rally organizers say demonstrates the technology can work even on a remote stretch of road. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Arctic Road Rally organizer and participant Dimitri Shane says the only problem his Tesla EV encountered along the nearly 1,100-mile trip up the Dalton and back could have happened on any Alaska road.
I got two chips and a flat, yep.
Shane says the windshield damage and deflated tire were pretty much the only issues that the EVs had to deal with during the round trip to Aliktuk Point, the northernmost road accessible spot in North America.
You know, there's no questions of the fact that can EV truck drive 600 miles? Of course it can. But what it needs is charging.
Shane says the four temporary EV charging stations and infrastructure that rally organizers set up along the Dalton were the most important technology showcased by the event.
That's what the significance was, to be able to bring fast charging to this route and electrify it and make it function like a modern highway does, like in California or in Seattle.
Shane is executive director of the Alaska Electric Vehicle Association, which, along with partner nonprofits Recharge Alaska and Launch Alaska, promote installation of EV fast charging stations on the state's road system. He says many more are needed to enable EV owners to drive long distances in Alaska, a challenge that made it difficult for some road rally participants just to make it to the starting line in Fairbanks.
We had drivers who drove from Homer to Fairbanks. Their charging was more challenging between Homer to Fairbanks than it was from Fairbanks to Aliktuk Point.
That's because there are no fast charging stations between Soldotna and Cantwell, a distance of about 350 miles, about twice as far as the four charging stations on the Dalton were spaced apart. But rally organizers came up with solutions that could help the state fill those gaps, according to Tim Leach, a transportation expert with Launch Alaska, an Anchorage-based startup business accelerator.
Some of this technology demonstration that we're undertaking here with the Arctic Road Rally will help us identify what technology solutions are suitable, both on the vehicle and the charging side, for some of these communities that have a different set of infrastructure.
The Alaska Energy Authority has been leading the effort to set up fast chargers with help from the Federal Department of Energy and corporate sponsors, and to Alaska Electric Utilities, Anchorage-based Chugach Electric, which helped transport the rally's chargers, and Fairbanks-based Golden Valley Electric Association, which Shane says has been very supportive overall.
Golden Valley is the only utility company in the entire state of Alaska who has invested in building out fast chargers.
Two of those chargers are at Golden Valley's headquarters, and the co-op made them available for rally participants, along with the parking lot for use as the starting line for the event.
We've always had an interest in electric vehicles, and we have had a lot of requests from members to help to support electric vehicles in the interior.
Golden Valley spokesperson Meadow Bailey says that interest in EVs began 51 years ago when the co-op tested an early prototype. She says that project was abandoned when testing showed its primitive battery couldn't keep a charge during cold winter days. That's a problem that maybe could have been alleviated with more EV fast charging stations. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Read Diverse, Read Indie on Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors from the world of independent publishing. Author Palmer Pickering's book, Moon Deeds, revolves around 20-year-old twins Cassidy and Tor, who must save Earth from a ruthless enemy at a time when the only force more powerful than alien technology is magic. Moon Deeds launches the siblings' journey across the galaxy, where they must learn their power as the Star Children, claim their shamanic heritage, and battle dark forces that threaten humankind. We spoke with her about this addictive installment in the Star Children saga.
What I really like to write is fantasy, and it just so happened that the things that inspired this story were science fiction and nature. So I really consider this series that I'm working on, which is the Star Children saga. Moon Deeds is the first book and Light Fighters is the second book. So I was drawn to write this over a couple of inspirations which were in the science fiction realm. So I'm basically writing fantasy in a science fiction setting. I consider this work to be fantasy first, but because it's set on other planets, because it has future tech, because it has space travel, it falls into the science fiction world building kind of realm. So it forces it to be science fiction, although I consider it really to be fantasy.
That was author Palmer Pickering on her new book, Moon Deeds, and its sequel, Light Fighters, which has just been released. Read Diverse, Read Indie is presented by the Independent Book Publishers Association.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 18th day of August, the year 2022. The sun rose at 6:40. It will set again at 9:44. That will give us 15 hours and 4 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 43 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 40 degrees, set in 1966. And our record high was 74 degrees. That was set in 1944, 1999, and 2019. Currently 55 degrees here in Kodiak, with fog and mist rolling around. East winds to 5 miles per hour at the airport right now. They have 4 miles of visibility. Rain is likely for the rest of the afternoon, mainly before 1, so at least for the next few minutes. Cloudy skies for the rest of the day anyway, with a high near 60, south winds to 10. Rain tonight after 4 a.m., low around 54 overnight with southeast winds to 15. And rain tomorrow, high near 59 tomorrow with southeast winds to 15. And they're talking about between 1/2 to 3/4 of an inch of rain falling tomorrow. Rain is likely Friday night, mainly after 10 p.m. Well, let's see what the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has to say.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 27, date issue 10 a.m. on August 17th. There will be a 72-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 17th until 6 p.m. Saturday, August 20th in the following areas. In the central and north Cape sections of the northwest Kodiak district, the Anton Larson Bay, Sheraton Bay, and Kajuyak Bay and Spiriton Bay sections remain closed, and the southwest Afognak section of the Afognak district. Closed waters are expanded until 6 p.m. Saturday, August 20th at Molina Creek to consist of all waters within 1/2 nautical mile of the beach near the stream terminus of Molina Creek, stream number 251105, between 58 degrees 10 north latitude and 58 degrees 11 north latitude. As previously announced, the following areas will close to commercial salmon fishing at 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 17th. The Outer Karlik section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Uyak Bay, Zacher Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Terror Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Humpy Dead Man section of the Alatak District, and the Eastside Kodiak District, except for the Inner Ugak and Outer Ugak Bay sections, remain closed. Cost recovery fisheries are ongoing at Katoy Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishing opportunities in the Duck Bay, Iyuit Bay, Inner Katoy Bay, and Outer Katoy Bay sections will depend on the ability of the Regional Aquaculture Association to meet cost recovery needs, and all cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. Fishermen are reminded that until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak districts south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse anglers in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And, Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory for tomorrow. South winds to 20 knots today, seas to 5 feet. Southeast 25 tomorrow, seas to 8 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, variable winds to 10 knots today, seas to 2 feet. And for tomorrow, east winds to 20 knots, seas to 4 feet. This Sunday, it's the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center Ticket by Donation Fundraising Concert. That's Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Kodiak State Fairgrounds. Gates open at 1:30. It's a no-alcohol, family-friendly event featuring LME Tiller and the Twang, Home Brew, and Mary Brett. Tickets can be purchased at the gate with a cash or a check for whatever donation you think you'd like to give the Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center. Sunday at 2. There will be a Board of Education regular meeting on Monday, August 22nd. That will begin at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room. That's F-140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will also be streamed through BlueJeans, and login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District's website at www.kibsd.org. Look under the Board of Education tab. For more information, call 907-486-7566. All are invited to the Lutik Museum's annual meeting and open house. That's from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday, August 27th at the Lutik Museum. The board meeting starts at 1 p.m. and will be followed by an open house at about 1:30 through 3 p.m. Executive Director April Lactonen Counselor will provide presentations on recent projects and museum renovation plans during the board meeting portion. After the meeting, stay for the open house to see artifacts up close, explore some educational materials, and enjoy museum exhibits, as well as an opportunity to meet the full staff and ask them questions about their work. There's also a great opportunity to view the headdress and masks that are on loan from France before they are returned this fall. Let them share all the exciting things happening at the Lutik Museum with you. It's free and open to all, and again, that's Saturday, August 27th at the Lutik Museum. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is hosting an 8-week grief recovery method program that will run every Wednesday starting September 7th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. And that's happening in the multipurpose room at the Kodiak Public Library. It's a chance to learn effective tools for how to process feelings of pain and loss, while also learning how to live with grief in a manageable way. It will be done in an interactive and supportive environment and facilitated by qualified grief specialists. Space is limited, so please register. Call 907-512-0600 or visit their website at www.hpck.org.
The polls have closed on the August 16th primary election. Preliminary results have been released online by the Alaska Division of Elections. Final results will not be posted until Wednesday, August 31st, giving time for all ballots postmarked by Election Day to be counted, including mail ballots from rural Alaska, from college students in the lower 48, and from Alaskans serving in our military abroad. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Support for KMXT comes from GCI. Since 2017, the GCI Suicide Prevention Fund has given nearly $500,000 to Alaska organizations and nonprofits in an effort to help prevent suicide and promote healthy communities. More information about suicide prevention resources and initiatives can be found at gci.com/gives.
A Venusian phosphine scoop this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. Cardiff University astronomer Jane Greaves has returned with more evidence for phosphine gas in the atmosphere of Earth's broiling sister planet. Jane and I will talk about the implications, including speculative models of how living organisms could be responsible. It's a delightful conversation with a delightful guest, and it ends with a challenge for the more artistically gifted among you. Equally delightful, Bruce Betts will pick up with a look at the current night sky, a random space fact, and a new space trivia contest, all as part of this week's What's Up. Have you heard last week's Stinky Comet feature? My conversation with three University of Bern scientists gets top billing in the August 12 edition of the Downlink, the Planetary Society's free weekly newsletter. There's more comet commotion in this issue, including a pretty image of Swift Tuttle, the body that is responsible for the just-finished Perseid meteor shower. The Artemis 1 mission is still headed toward its first launch opportunity on August 29th. I'll be there with my society colleagues, Chief Advocate Casey Dreyer and Editorial Director Ray Paletta.